This is Jess Goldson, and you are listening to CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, a project by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. This series is centered on the opioid crisis in Toronto, including harmful substance use. We will hear about harm reduction approaches at a local community service provider and learn more about how locals can confirm that the unregulated drug they are using contains what they expect.
If someone's goal is to get sober, they can't get sober if they're dead.
My name is Juno Zavitz. I am the program coordinator of Breakaway's Grief, Loss, and Wellness Initiative in Toronto, Ontario.
I spoke with Zavitz regarding the need for harm reduction approaches other than abstinence for substance users in Toronto.
Breakaway has been in operation since 89 and has always been rooted in non-abstinence forms of supporting people who use drugs. I think Breakaway's approach to harm reduction has always, like a lot of places in social services, become increasingly progressive, but our approach is rooted in harm reduction, which means that we don't work from an abstinence model. So if someone comes to us seeking support around their drug use or something else that is going on in their life, whether it's housing insecurity, food insecurity, mental health related incidents, our first suggestion is never that someone stops using drugs or even cuts down their use in the first place, which is what we mean by a harm reduction approach. So Breakaway has a number of different programs within the agency. Most are all outreach based. We have some that are more specialized for particular marginalized communities like queer, trans, and two-spirit populations are serviced through the Pieces to Pathways initiative. We have a program that is specific for people who are on opioid agonist treatments such as methadone and suboxone. We have a housing support program where we partner with another agency that has supportive housing residences.
Opioid agonists are medications that prevent withdrawal and reduce cravings for opioid drugs. Zavitz outlines the impact of COVID-19 on the opioid crisis, which includes disruption to service delivery and social supports, and changes in the drug supply, including analogs and contamination. An analog is an imitation of a drug that we normally see in the unregulated drug supply. Contamination refers to the addition of a drug to the original substance that the drug-using person does not expect to be present.
The biggest impact has been the increase of fatal overdoses that we've seen as a result of people having to isolate or being forced into isolation when using substances, as well as the way that the pandemic impacted the drug supply. So not only did we have a gap in service delivery where people were alone more often and therefore using alone more often, what we also saw was an increase of even more risky forms of fentanyl analogs that have been increasingly volatile and increasingly unpredictable, as well as the addition of other depressant drugs like benzodiazepines, which are also found in the drug supply. So not only was there disruption of community support where peers and drug users would have been able to see each other and use together and spot each other in their use, that was interrupted, as well as social service delivery interruption, in addition to fluctuations in what's actually showing up in the drug supply right now. Safe sites, safe injection sites, or OPSs, whatever they're kind of being currently called in government legislature, keep people alive. At the end of the day, people will continue to use and people will continue to die if we don't provide them with interventions like supervised consumption sites or safe supply programs, of which there are now a couple in Toronto.
My name is Haley Thompson. I'm the project manager of Toronto's drug checking service.
Thompson speaks to the inception of the service, which was initiated so that drug-using people can confirm what substance or substances are present in what they are using.
Drug checking is a service that is funded by Health Canada and the St. Michael's Hospital Foundation as a response to the toxic drug supply crisis. And we were funded to be able to share with people who use drugs the contents of their drugs, to be able to make more informed decisions about drug use. Toronto's drug checking service collects small drug samples from people who use drugs at 5 of Toronto's supervised consumption sites, Riverdale Keep 6 in the east, as well as Moss Park and the Works by Toronto Public Health in the downtown core. And then as you go more west, Toronto's Drug Checking Service is also a part of the Queen West and Parkdale sites of the Parkdale Queen West Community Health Center.
Now we hear about the process used to check the drugs.
Each day, a bike courier picks up collected samples and delivers them to either the St. Michael's Hospital or Center for Addiction and Mental Health, sometimes better known as KMH, clinical laboratories, where they're analyzed to determine their composition. Results are then returned to the consumption sites that collected the sample, where they are then communicated to service users along with tailored harm reduction. And then beyond informing individual service users, the program also provides an opportunity to monitor the drug supply in real time, which we then share on our website publicly every other week in an effort to inform the public, clinicians, researchers, and policymakers on exactly what we're finding in Toronto's drug supply through checked samples. So we've checked about 5,000 samples to date. About 50% of the samples we check are fentanyl. Other opioids we check include heroin, Percocets, oxycodone, really anything that people are purchasing from the unregulated market that they want to check. We find the fentanyl supply is very contaminated. We know from our samples check that only 5% of fentanyl substances that have been submitted to the service only contained fentanyl, which means that the other 95% of the samples that we've checked did not align with service users' expectations because it included drugs other than fentanyl.
Thompson indicates here that of all samples tested where the drug-using person thought that the sample only contained fentanyl, only 5% of samples only contained fentanyl.
There has never been a recorded fatal overdose at the consumption sites in Toronto. They work, they do the job that they are supposed to. They also provide people with a place that they can come and openly talk about their use. For folks who their bias skews more towards abstinence, one of the things when people are afraid about the potential for quote unquote enabling of drug use that supervised consumption sites provide, my retort is always, if someone's goal is to get sober, they can't get sober if they're dead. We know that people will continue to use drugs no matter what the law or policy in place is. And I really believe that drug use is a life-saving activity, and it was for me. Drugs kept me alive for a very long time. And at the same time, they were also life-threatening in the way that I was using them.
Thompson highlights key substances in the contamination of opioids called adulteration with other harmful substances, including benzodiazepines and nitazene opioids.
Some of those drugs that we see present most alongside fentanyl include a class of drugs known as benzodiazepines or benzodiazepine-related drugs. Currently, benzos present in about 65% of fentanyl samples checked. Other drugs we often see alongside fentanyl include a class of opioids called nitazene opioids, and they range in potency from being comparable or just as potent as fentanyl to being up to 10 to 20 times more potent than fentanyl. And we regularly see nitazene opioids present in fentanyl samples alongside benzodiazepines. So all three of these drugs put people in risk or dangerous risk of vital suppression. So slowing down of breathing, blood pressure, heart rate. We're seeing this in conjunction with a high number of opioid overdose-related deaths. And while we can't say that they're correlated, obviously, it is quite alarming that fentanyl is this contaminated.
Thompson enumerates the various outcomes of the drug checking service and the need for the program to continue. Safe consumption sites are referred to here using the acronym SCS.
I think on an individual level, the outcomes are that without our service, people really don't know what is in the drugs they're taking. And our service is also the only drug checking service up and running in Ontario. So through our service, people are able to make more informed decisions about their drug use, or at least know what they're taking, because in the absence of a regulated market, there is no confirmation that what they've purchased or what they've received is actually what they get. So on an individual level, we're really happy to provide information to people who use drugs to help them make more informed decisions. And then also, we know that clinicians are using our data to help better inform the care that they're providing to people who use drugs, whether that is somebody who may be trying to access safer supply or people who are looking to use the SCS. Knowing what is in drugs helps harm reduction specialists at the sites better prepare for potential adverse effects or overdoses. Roughly a quarter of the people who use Toronto's drug checking service have never accessed harm reduction services before. Drug checking could be seen as a gateway to harm reduction, which we think is really wonderful that people who would not previously accessed these services are now.
The retort is people can't stop using fentanyl if they're dead. And that is the risk that is very, very real for everyone using those more risky drugs.
This is Jess Goldson, and you've been listening to CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. In this first episode, we learned about the potential harms of promoting abstinence as the first or only harm reduction approach. Additionally, we gleaned the ways that harm can be reduced by informing drug-using people of the composition of their drugs. Episode 2 will cover the need for additional supports for harm reduction workers themselves, as well as additional barriers to harm reduction of unregulated drug-using people. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, a project by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.